In 2018, actually, after all this time in a war zone, the Syrian regime and Russia, they make a very brutal military campaign against the area, and they started to bomb every second, use all the types of weapons, everything, including chemical weapons, to make us, you know, give up and leave. They killed many people that time, destroyed many, you know, places, hospitals, target everything. And then we found ourselves that, you know, it's they have war plans, and we had only like some factions who fight them. So they said, you leave or we kill all of you.
You are now listening to the podcast where authors inspire listeners to become authors, the Going North Podcast. I'm your host, certified self-leadership trainer, best-selling author, and book enthusiast, Dom Brightman. And you're going to be listening to a different author that will inspire you to join the business of immortality, known as authorship. Now let the fun begin. How's it going, my friends? I'm excited because yours truly has finally added another offering to the wonderful mission of helping you to advance further in life, known as the Going North Advancement Compass. This new book is a success journal. It is the fulfillment field guide for your success. So if you want a method to crack the code on how to be a good day architect, then pick up this wonderful book right here. If you want to stop feeling lost and start conquering your goals, then pick up this wonderful destiny diary to document your days, known as the Going North Advancement Compass, on Amazon.com. And we're going to put a link to that in the wonderful show notes. That way you can check it out like a library book, my friends. Now let's get on with today's episode. And today on the Highlight Reel, Builder for Authors, known as the Going North Podcast, we got another super special, awesome human for you today, my friends. That's right indeed, because we got one heck of a treat for you that's good enough to eat, my friends. That's right indeed, because today's guest, y'all, she's a mom, she's a wife, a pediatrician, as well as an advocate, an award-winning advocate, I might add, for her wonderful work with helping out women and children's rights. Let's give it up for the amazing and brave, the one, the only, Dr. Imani Ballour. How you doing today, Dr. Imani?
Hi. Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure having you here. It's right day. It's right day. Congrats. Congrats. Be a bit through a lot, and hopefully time's a little bit simpler for you now after all the stuff you've been through.
Yeah, well, I'm happy because my co-author and I decided to do this, and yeah, and after, like, it takes a long time, but we succeed to write this. To me, it's very important story, and I'm proud that I could tell this story, because it's not, you know, a simple experience for more than 6 years of atrocities, suffering in a war zone. To write everything with details, to remember again everything. And I mean, many things I'll never forget, but I mean, there's a lot to remember, because we want to write everything. We write the whole stories of everyone. So it wasn't easy. So I'm happy that we could do this. And I wish that everyone can read it and know the truth, the whole truth about what's happening in Syria.
Yeah, because if I'm not mistaken, basically you were the manager of a hospital in the caves, because they blew up and destroyed the original children's hospital that you're in charge of, right?
Yeah, exactly. We called it the cave. Our hospitals were underground. We moved to underground because the Syrian regime and its allies, Russia and Iran, were targeting hospitals, and they destroyed many hospitals in the area. So we moved underground. It was like a basement, and we expanded, you know, many times. And we made tunnels underground to be able to move. So it was like dark, and, you know, we have no enough resources. That's why we called it the cave. It's not exactly a cave, but we called it the cave because, yeah, it was underground.
Yeah, definitely. So, my goodness. So, basically, going through that and having to deal with the Syrian Civil War, if I'm not mistaken, was it 350,000 people killed, right?
Look, it's different numbers. We can, I mean, no one can know about how many people were killed in Syria because there's a lot of people are missing. For example, my brother is missing. The Syrian regime arrested him and in 2012, and so far we know nothing about him. My brother-in-law and many people, we know that maybe, you know, the Syrian regime killed them, or they don't tell us when we ask, and we don't dare to ask actually about them. So maybe the some organization try to have a number about the people who are killed, but it's very hard to know. I mean, maybe 500,000, maybe 1,000,000. So it's not easy to tell.
I get you. I get you. Makes sense. Makes sense. 'Cause it's like, oh, don't want to poke the bear in a way when things are, definitely just don't want to poke the bear. Definitely. Definitely things can get crazy. Hope, who knows? Maybe he might still be alive somewhere. Maybe, hopefully, might get to reunite one day.
Hope so. Thank you.
So, my goodness. And this actually was a documentary at first, basically documenting your time there and all the things you had to go through. So how did they, if I'm not mistaken, National Geographic got a hold of your story. How did they get a hold of your story like that?
Yes, you know, after the war started, the siege and, you know, bombing everything, we wanted to tell the world about what's happening. I mean, the Syrian regime was telling their lies for everyone, and we wanted to tell everyone about the truth. And that's why I said it's okay. They offered me, three cinematographers came to the hospital and asked me to film in the hospital to show the world everything, and I said, okay, let's do this. It wasn't easy. I mean, you know, to find a camera, follow you when you are working, especially in hospital. I mean, with many, you know, casualties like the children, everyone. It's not easy. But I said yes because I really wanted to show the world what's happening, and I was hopeful that maybe, I mean, we got help. Maybe the international community, that the strong countries can help us, can stop the war, can stop the siege, can send us like medicine or food or something. That was my goal of showing this. So yeah, I said yes, you can film, and they started filming in the hospital in 2016. And in the beginning, actually, I thought that they're gonna film the hospital and the work, not follow me. I mean, and some of my colleagues. But yeah, this has happened. At the beginning, I wasn't comfortable with the camera, but then, like after maybe less than a month, I said I didn't even look at the camera or feel it because we were very busy. You know, we have like every day a massacre, maybe sometimes many massacres a day. A lot of casualties, blood, cries, destruction everywhere. So we didn't look at the camera. So yeah, I'm happy because we could show some of what's happening there. They started filming in 2016 till 2018 because we forced to leave that time. So it's for 2 years. I mean, not every day, of course, but it show an idea about what was happening, about the situation there, what we needed, about the suffering of the people. But to me, of course, it wasn't enough to show like 90 minutes. The film is 90 minutes, so it wasn't enough to me to tell the whole truth, everything. So that's why I decided to tell this story through this book.
Beautiful indeed, and glad you're able to get over the I guess the discomfort to find your comfort zone, because it was like, hey, it's too busy in here to be uncomfortable because you got so many lives to save and a lot of, I guess, BS in a way, since it was a probably still is a patriarchal society, like heavily patriarchal, where you had to deal with a lot of disrespect too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I wasn't surprised, because it's my community. I know the custom, the traditions. I know their thoughts, especially the old man. But not in a wartime, not in the circumstances when where everything, I mean, everyone were suffering and everything was very, I mean, we're all scared. And yeah, I know this hospital, and I just believe that I'm a doctor like other doctors. So they manage the hospital at the beginning, and I believe that I can do this. I mean, I know what we need. I have a plan to develop the hospital, to expand it, and actually, I did what I was planning to. I make the tunnels. I expand the hospital. I was able to brought many medical supplies to smuggle it from the tunnels also. So I thought that it's okay with my community. But then when I became the manager of the hospital and I start to hear some men to say, why you put a woman in this position? And some of them said, don't we have enough men to bring a woman? And what surprised me more that the young guys, I mean, and I remember an educated guy, he was working with us. He was a lab technician. And I mean, he was my friend. We were working together before I became the manager. And he said to me, we have no problem with you to work with us, but we don't want a woman to be our manager. I really was surprised because he's young, he's educated. I mean, I was thinking he shouldn't think like this, but that motivates me to continue to do something to approve that women can do the same that men do, and maybe we can do better. So I just wanted to do this. I mean, beside all the responsibilities that I had, I mean, managing a hospital in a war zone in a besieged area with not enough resources, it's really it's a burden. And then I have to fight for women. I mean, to fight because I'm a woman. And yeah, I started to do this. I said, I will do this. I believe that I can. I hired many women in the hospital, like nurses, other in other places, and I think that the hospital was good. And finally, and before we left in 2018, after the Syrian regime and Russia destroyed the other hospitals around us, our hospital is still working. We have enough resources. I mean, not enough exactly, but we have resources. We deal with the massacres. We could help. So some men of my community came to me and they said, you were right and you did a great job. I was very happy to hear this because, I felt like I could change their minds. It's not easy, but it's possible to change this. I think it's very bad ideas. So yeah, I will advise the woman to, yeah, just keep going. We can do this.
Definitely indeed, and glad you decided to keep going that you did, because in today's society it's like, hey, it's okay for women to lead. It's okay for that. There's nothing wrong about that, especially when it comes to war times. It's like, hey, if yourself basically the most capable person there, I'd rather have the most capable person in charge who knows everything and can help us out the best with our situation. So, my goodness. So, where do you think your resilience came from during those times?
I mean, when I was a little kid, my father always say to me that you are stubborn, you are stubborn. I wasn't stubborn. I mean, I think that I wasn't stubborn, but I was always hear that there's like they differentiate between boys and girls. Many things they said that you are a girl, you can't do that. It's allowed for boys to do many things. It's not allowed for girls. So I always was asking why, and I don't understand this that time. Even when I become young girls. So many things now are is forbidden for young girls. And you know, they started to they want to wed all the girls in, you know, the teenagers in my community that time, like in 90, around 2000, 2010 at that time. So I was always just said, I don't want to get married. I want to be something important. I was very good at school. So my mother always talked about education, and she said that education is the most important for the girls. You know, through education, you can approve yourself, you can be independent. My mother wasn't a strong woman. Actually, she was weak. She can't make decision in our family, but she always advised us and pushed us. And she inspired me, actually, maybe because she wasn't strong and I wanted, I mean, just to defend her many times and defend her opinion, because I believe that she is correct. You know, even when I was a child, I mean, all children like loves their mothers, and we believe that our mothers are correct, and they are, we're sure they are saying the truth. So I wanted to do this maybe for my mother, and she was like, she inspired me to do everything. She was happy because I was very good at school. I wanted to be an engineer when I was at like intermediate school, but my father said, no, it's not for girls. And I don't blame him, actually, because everyone in our community talk about this and said, no women engineers. I mean, it's not for women. And I couldn't fight for this dream that time. But when I got a hard remarks and I was able to enter the Faculty of Medicine, it's not easy to study medicine in Syria. You need very high marks. So I did it, and I started studying medicine. I liked it, and I was happy because I said, now I can do something. I can change maybe the situation that I don't like. I can be independent. And that's, you know, this is how it started. I mean, I think and I believe that we're born with our, I mean, it's our nature that we believe that we are free, we are independent, we can change everything that we believe that it's not true and it's not correct. So yeah, this is what I believe. Maybe we don't need always people to inspire us, but I have my mother. That's a good thing for me.
Nice. That's what I'm talking about, indeed. That's what I'm talking about, indeed. So my goodness, so did they have a bunch of guards at the engineering class saying, "Hey, we know you're thinking about it. Don't even try it. You know you want to be an engineer. Don't even think about it. Go somewhere else." Were they that stern about it?
You know what? I always believe that engineers are lucky because they could being engineers. I still have these thoughts. I don't know. But I got married to a civil engineer. So this is a good thing.
Ah, there you go. She said, "I'm gonna sneak in somehow. I'm a merry one." Yeah, there we go. Yeah, take that. Oh, man. And congrats on being a wife and a mom. So, my goodness. So, if I'm not mistaken, you actually were displaced from Syria forcibly, right?
Forcibly, exactly. And in 2018, actually, after all this time in a war zone, the Syrian regime and Russia, they make a very brutal military campaign against the area, and they started to bomb every second, use all the types of weapons, everything, including chemical weapons, to make us, you know, give up and leave. They killed many people that time, destroyed many, you know, places, hospitals, target everything. And then we found ourselves that, you know, it's they have war plans, and we had only like some factions who fight them. So they said, finally, some negotiation with some people there, they said, you leave or we kill all of you. And actually they killed a lot. So yeah, we said, I didn't want, you know, I didn't want to leave. I love my country, I love my town, and I wanted to stay. But they forced us to leave. And I left in 2018 in March. And I went to the north of Syria. And then I entered Turkey, met my husband, and got married. I started the refugee journey, if I can call it.
There we go. There we go. Yeah, it's crazy how that happened. So did anyone find out about the documentary? Is that what caused them to get even more aggressive to really just threaten to kill, if not kill, a lot of folks?
No, it wasn't only forcing me. I mean, we were like 500,000 people nearly in the area, and they make this, against this campaign. They were, doing this against like city after city in Syria, town after town, like the Syrian regime and Russia. They were like bombing and killing a lot of people. For example, focus on one city. I mean, killing a lot, bombing a lot. Then they forced the other people who stayed there to leave. They brought them buses and put them in the buses and asked them to leave to the north of Syria. There's in northwest of Syria, there's an area out of their control. So yeah, they did this with many, many cities, and then they, started doing this in our area in 2018. They did the same. They bombed us all the time, and then they brought us buses. And yeah, they forced us to leave. And yeah, we left. And that not because of the documentary. And they know, we have a lot. We had a lot of people who carries cameras and start to film and show photos and videos from the beginning. I mean, from 2011, they started to show this. And the Syrian regime knows this. But because, I mean, many of Syrian people like maybe 80% of the Syrian people who protest against the Syrian regime, so they couldn't deal with everyone, but they started to do this slowly, and unfortunately they could do this and make everyone leave from their areas.
All righty. Yeah, because that was one of the thoughts that popped in my head. I'm like, oh, I wonder if they found out that they were filming, and they're like, okay, let's turn our attention over there in that direction. Let's get them the heck up out of here. And looks like it was just more than that, sadly. So, my goodness. So, how was the transition from that high stress, high conflicts area to eventually becoming a wife and a mother? Because are you in the US now, or are you still out in Turkey?
I'm in the US now. I settled down here in 2 years ago. Yeah, and it was, very hard time when I left after everything being very, very busy. I mean, I witnessed many, many atrocities, killing of people, death, suffering of children, fear. And then when I moved to Turkey first, and I found them. Myself, I got married very quickly after I moved, and then I just sit at home and start to think about everything. That was very, very hard time for me, very hard time. I mean, I start to think with all the details, with all the children. I was working as a pediatrician there, although I couldn't continue studying pediatrics, but there were not enough doctors, that's why. So I started to think about the kids I met, the kids who passed away. I mean, the kids who were suffocated by the chemical attacks, and to remember them. And sometimes I start to blame myself, why I couldn't help this kid, why this kid died, why this child, I mean, why I couldn't help this child, why this child died, and I could do nothing for him. Maybe we were able to help him and we didn't. Why we didn't do this? How we think about this. I mean, it's children lives. It's the most like valuable things. I don't know how to describe this, but it was very, very hard time thinking about this, especially about the children, to remember them. And it was very hard to me. And I didn't forget them. And it's hard to forget. And And now I said, I don't want to forget these children who I met, who died, because who suffered, because they have the right to be unforgotten. They have the right to tell their stories, to tell the world about them, about their suffering. They were innocent. They have nothing to do with the war, with the siege. I mean, why they were starving and no one care about them? Why they have to go through this? Why they have to sit in a place under bombing to see the world burn, and you can see the fear in their eyes, and we can do nothing for them. These children deserve to tell their stories. And that was also a goal of telling my story through this book. I want to tell everyone about these children, so maybe we can raise awareness about what was happening, about the horrible wars, so this can never happen again.
Amen to that, because yeah, it's a lot of sadness going on in different parts of the world that doesn't get enough attention depending on where you are in the world, and it's really a shame, and a lot of stuff needs to change, especially when it comes to the children, because it's like, hey, the children don't need to go through this, especially. It's like adults, we have enough of our own issues, but the children especially don't need to go through this. So my goodness. So, since you are going on a podcast, if not interview tour, talking about your wonderful book, is there a question that you wish folks would ask you more often?
I wish that I mean my main goal of this book is to get help for Syria, to remind people of Syria, try to get attention again, because after 13 years of the Syrian revolution and the war and what happened, I mean people forgot about Syria now. So I wish the people who read this book, who read these stories, who know the truth, to try to help in any way, like take simple action, do something to help Syrian people. I mean, help everyone who suffered in the world. And I'm now talking about Syria because it's really now forgotten. Like many people in Syria are living now in camps. Many children, they denied all the human rights. They have nothing. I mean, they have no hope. So I wish this book can ask people to bring the hope again for the Syrian children, especially the children who were born in the war, know nothing but the war, destruction, the blood, the fear, the cold. So I wish people try to help these kids, do something for them, raise awareness, speak up for Syria, make a pressure on politicians, donate for the organizations who help them that can help.
There we go. There we go. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. So my goodness, so with all your stories and everything else, I guess working with your co-author, what was the process like putting the book together, having to relive some of that stuff you went through?
Yeah, I'm grateful for my co-author Rania Abu Zayed, and I told the story in Arabic because my English is not perfect, so and it's easier to me to tell it in my language. I told the story in Arabic to Rania, and she wrote this story, so I'm thankful for her.
Yep, there we go. There we go. Made life a lot easier. And your English is great, by the way. Don't want you to beat yourself up over that.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Indeed. Yes, indeed. Your English is great. Freaking love it. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. I just talk like Sonic the Hedgehog from time to time. That's just my problem. I can
No,
speak
thank you.
characteristic.
Thank you. I can understand you. Sorry.
Oh, man. So my goodness, so now that you got the documentary out the way, was nominated for an Oscar too, if I'm not mistaken, and you got this book, which will probably be a bestseller, I'll speak it into existence. What are you excited about now over the next 6 to 12 months?
I'm really, I'm happy that I could make this book reach to everyone, and I'm thankful for National Geographic. with the publisher and everyone in the team for their help. So I wish that everyone read this book. I mean, know the truth about Syria. This is very important. And then get help for Syria. Look, it's my main goal now in the life. It's my dream to go back to Syria again, to make this criminal president and his family and the war criminals around him to leave Syria, to be held accountable. This is my dream. And so we can then go back to Syria and rebuild our country. So maybe this book can help. Maybe all the efforts for Syrians around the world can help to do this. I wish we can, you know, go back very soon.
There we go, indeed. That's right, indeed. Let's hope that's a big win. It'll take a lot, but let's hope it's a big win for you and the people of Syria, definitely, because a lot of conflict, a lot of war, definitely not good for anybody. Definitely not good for anybody. It's like human beings at their worst.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we're coming down to the question that every guest gets to answer. So if you were to wake up tomorrow and you were 25 again, but you're still in the current year, what advice would you give to yourself?
Well, I mean, I will advise myself to fight more and to be more stubborn for my dreams and my hopes, my wishes. I mean, to fight more, just don't give up things that I couldn't do. I believe now if I fight more, I can do this. So yeah, just don't give up.
Yeah, beautiful indeed. Well, you heard the doc, y'all. Don't give up, y'all. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. That's right. The example of leadership in action. Example of leadership in your ears. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. The amazing Amadi, y'all. That's right indeed. Been through a lot and was able to live to tell the tale, and now you can read about it. You can even check out the documentary indeed. That's right indeed. Bring some tissues, though. You're probably going to be needing it. That's right indeed, because they capture the faces of a lot of the folks, especially the kids going through their situation, sadly. And yep, you're definitely going to be needing it. So definitely check out all of her wares. So for those who need to buy the book and keep up with your journey, Doctor, what's the best way for folks to do so?
Yeah, it's online. It's in the bookstores. You can find it. The publisher is National Geographic. It's on Amazon. It's available, actually.
All right, there you go. And published by National Geographic, so you know it's going to be good. It's going to be top tier, y'all. Top tier indeed. It'll be the cream of the crop. It'll be the cherry on top, y'all. That's right, indeed. The good stuff, indeed. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes. That way folks can check out all of the wares, y'all. That's right, indeed. And add it to their library and learn. Heck, maybe even be inspired to do something great. That's right, indeed. Well, any parting words before we close up shop?
I'd like to say that as human beings, it's not, I mean, it's a responsibility to help each other. It's not if we would like to do this or not. It's a responsibility. And that's why we are living here on the earth. Like, this is the goal of the life, I believe. So I wish you just, you know, if you are safe at your home, if you are warm, if you have enough food, and you're not worried about your children, like to feed them, to make them warm, just think a little about other children, about other people. They are really suffering, and you can, everyone, I'm talking with everyone, you can do something to help them, like simple action, talk about them, do anything, speak up, remind people of these people. I'm not talking only about Syria. I mean, everywhere there are people suffering, everywhere. So just think a little about them and try to make a simple action.
If you're hearing this part of the episode, that means you're one cool individual. Thanks a bunch for tuning in, and if you enjoyed what you heard, be sure to share it with at least one other person in your network, bonus points for three. And be sure to check out the backlog too while you're at it, because there are hundreds of wonderful episodes to choose from as well.